thought we were just getting warmed up for chanting. It's wonderful to be here, blissful to be here today. Let us pray together. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother,
Beloved Jesus Christ,
Blessed Master,
Dearest Mother,
Saints and sages of all religions, I bow to all of you. Free my life from all obstacles. And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only king.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Some holidays coming up, and one of them is today, is Diwali in India. It's the most popular, well-celebrated festival in India, and it represents different things to different people, but here is Papa's writing that is sent out for the thought for today. Diwali is a festival of lights. It is observed in commemoration of the triumph of the divine power over forces of darkness. Diwali must be for us a transmutation of a life under the thraldom of the senses to a life liberated from all bondage, born of ignorance. Many of the things that are done in marking this day in India. Before Diwali night, people clean, renovate, and decorate their homes and offices. On Diwali night, people dress up in new clothes or their best outfit, light up diyas or lights and candles inside and outside their home, participate in family puja, prayers, typically to Lakshmi, the goddess of fertility and prosperity. After puja, fireworks follow, then a family feast including sweets and exchange of gifts between family members and close friends. Diwali also marks a major shopping period in the nation where it is celebrated. So a bit of a combination of Christmas and New Year's for them because it is the beginning of their new year as well. One of the primary traditions behind Diwali is the return of Ram as going back to Ayodhya. The Ramayana is a tremendous writing. It's really one of the earliest love stories. It's the second longest epic poem in the world behind the Mahabharata. The story entails Ram meeting Sita. And of course it has tremendous symbolic value as well, that Ram represents the inner light, the Christ consciousness. Sita represents the soul. And as the story unfolds, they eventually find each other and are married. And then one day, Ram's father, who is the king, decides to make Ram prince regent. He has three wives. One of them is the mother of Ram, and there's other children by the other wives. And so one of the other wives claims her right because a promise was made to her, and she wants her son to be crowned king and for Ram to be sent away for 14 years. Into the jungles and wilderness, so that there will be no competition for the king, and kingdom, and by the time 14 years have passed, then her son will be well established as king. It's a misguided notion, an idea from the very beginning, but she does this, and the father feels compelled to tell Ram that he must leave, although he never really does it, but Ram comes to know that this is his father's obligation. So Ram voluntarily leaves. He wants to keep his father's word. Ram, or Rama, is an incarnation of Dharma, of doing the right thing for the right reasons. And so he leaves, but his wife Sita insists that she be taken with him, and he refuses at first, and she ups the ante and says that if he doesn't, that she will kill herself. So in the face of that, he says yes, for he very much wanted her to be along with him, but it's going to be a rough time of it. And Ram's younger brother, Lakshman, is glued next to Ram all the time, and there's no question that he will go and he will act as a servant to Ram and to Sita. So it takes them on this grand adventure, and they meet many saints, and Ram is ordained to be the salvation for different demons and difficulties as they go out into the wilderness. But one day, Sita is kidnapped and stolen away by the most evil of them all, Ravana. And he takes her far away to an island where he reigns as supreme ruler. This again is all symbolic, as Sita is taken southward and out to Lanka by this evil force. And Ravana represents the passions, lust, greed, all of it. And he captures the soul and takes it unwillingly with him and imprisons the soul. And this is what happens to us when we when we are taken capture by the senses and by desire and by lust and by greed and by fear and by envy and all the other aspects of this. And we are taken far away from the Christ light within ourselves, Rama in this case. So Rama goes on a search for Sita. And finally he finds her, but finds that she's far away. In the meantime, he's had these tremendous monkey kingdoms these are not ordinary monkeys. They have been incarnations of gods who have come for the purpose of helping Ram. And Hanuman is chief among them in terms of devotees and strength. And so Hanuman's able to jump all the way to Lanka and all the way back. And he takes word to Sita, who's very despondent, and that Ram is coming. And Ram comes, and a terrific battle ensues in which Ram and these hordes of monkeys and bears, they're all the animal nature you see, but that's been purified, it's been uplifted into heavenly kingdoms. And so they come and they do battle with these lower forces. And eventually, after a lot of back and forth, they are victorious. And Ram is able to reclaim Sita. And now they're ready to go back to Ayodhya. It's been 14 years. And Ram's brother, Bharat, said that if Ram does not return, that he will take his life. There's a lot of life-taking threats going on here. And so Ram must return, he says. Otherwise, that's what he'll do. And so Ram is anxious to get back now. And he's in this kingdom, Vibhishanu. Vibhishana is the king now there. And so the following morning, Vibhishana approaches Ram and told him his bath was ready. The Rakshasa said, hot and cold baths, as well as every sort of cosmetic, unguents, and perfume. So this is a big change, because Ram's lived like a hermit. None of these kinds of things have as he accepted in all of this time. He would not enter a town or a city because that was part of his sentence and going out. And so all of these things are ready for him, all the comforts of home, so to speak. And Ram replied that he had no desire for any pleasure of any kind until after he had seen Bharat. Bharat has vowed also to live like a hermit. He's taken over as king, but very unwillingly. And he took the sandals off of Ram's feet and he put them up on the throne. And whenever he has a decision, he consults the sandals and he consults the spirit and the of Ram in order to make his decisions. And he's living like a hermit. He's not living in the castle or any of the luxuries. He's fasting and he's going through everything that Ram has to go through. He told Vibhishanu, that prince is now living in austerity. He bathes in cold rivers and eats only roots and fruits gleaned from the forest. How can I accept any luxuries? Ram asked Vibhishanu to find a means by which he could return quickly to Ayodhya. Vibhishanu replied that the heavenly Pushpaka chariot was available. Ravana, the evil king, had taken this chariot, which moves according to one's will from Kuvera. He's the goddess of wealth, or the god of wealth. It still remains in Lanka, desiring to render you service, O Ram. Vibhishanu bowed low before Ram and repeatedly requested him to stay for a while in Lanka and accept his hospitality. But Ram was anxious to depart. He thought of his mother and of Bharat and how they must long to see him again. His exile was now over. He had promised to return immediately. If he did not return, they would surely be consumed by grief and anxiety. Bharat might even give up his life. Ram said, you have already fully honored me with your first-class counsel and advice. You have served me well on the battlefield, and I am deeply indebted to you. But now you must grant me leave, O valiant Rakshasa. My task is accomplished, and I must return quickly to Ayodhya. Vibhishanu acceded, and he at once invoked the Pushpaka, and it appeared in the sky. Ram gazed with wonder at the glowing golden chariot with its lofty jewel-encrusted mansions and countless golden trellises wreathed with garlands of heavenly flowers. After inviting Ram to board the chariot, Vibhishanu said, is there any final service I can render you before you leave? Ram asked the Rakshasa to bestow riches upon all the monkeys. Give them abundant gold and jewels to take back with them. The king should also reward his army. They would be well cared for and given everything they desire, for they must lay down their lives for his sake. Vibhishanu at once made arrangements for profuse wealth to be distributed to the monkeys. Then he helped Ram and Sita ascend to the chariot. Ram again thanked Vibhishanu for his service, and the Rakshasa sorrowfully watched him prepare to leave. Just as Ram was about to depart, Sugriva approached him. He's the king of the monkeys. O Ram, pray take the monkeys with you, he begged. We all desire to see you installed as emperor. After that, we will return to our own lands. Ram smiled and agreed. He invited all the monkeys to mount the celestial chariot, which was like a golden city. Looking at Vibhishanu, he said, you too should accompany me, O noble one. With all your kinsfolk and friends, please mount this chariot and come to Ayodhya. It's a wonderful aspect of Ram is that animals freely come in and out of his life all the time. And there's a lovely little story when they were building the bridge that went over to Lanka that there's a little squirrel that wanted to help. And these monkeys were moving these huge boulders, and as they put the name of Ram on each one of them, somehow they mysteriously floated so that they were able to build this bridge going all across. But this little squirrel wanted to help, but how to help? He's just a little squirrel. So he'd take a little sand in his tail, the brushy tail, and he'd run over to the bridge and he'd sprinkle the sand on, and then he'd run back and he'd get a little more sand and he'd run over and he'd put a little more sand on. And so the monkeys got a big kick out of this and they started giving him a little bit of a bad time. You know, what are you doing here? How is this being of help? But Ram saw him, and the squirrel came over and felt very sad because the monkeys were giving him a hard time. And Ram just reached down with his three fingers and started stroking him along his back and up his tail. And even today, you'll see the squirrels with the three stripes that go down the back spine and up the tail. And that's from Ram stroking him and comforting him because the monkeys were giving him a bad time. So Ram's on very friendly basis with all of the animal kingdom. With all the monkeys back aboard and the chariot continued, they passed over the forest where Ram had spent his exile. When they reached Bharadvaja's hermitage, Ram desired to meet with the rishi. He stopped the chariot and went down to see the sage, bowing low before him. Bharadvaja offered his blessings and informed Ram that Bharat was anxious to see him. The sage knew of everything in Ayodhya from his disciples, who visited the city frequently. He told Ram that everyone was expecting his return at any moment. Ram replied, "Please exert your power and make all the trees surrounding Ayodhya filled with heavenly fruits. All those who will travel to the city to witness my coronation should be amply fed." At once, Bharadvaja meditated, and by his mystic power, all the trees for 20 miles around Ayodhya became heavy with fruits. The sage said to Ram, "You should enter Ayodhya tomorrow after sending ahead a messenger." Ram agreed and turned to Hanuman. He asked the monkey to proceed ahead to the city and inform Bharat that he would soon arrive. On the way, the monkey should stop at Srinagavira and inform Gupta of the news. Ram then said to Hanuman, "Closely observe Bharat's features when you tell him that I am returning. I wish to know his reaction." This is his brother who's been king for 14 years. "I wish to know his reaction. A kingdom rich in lands and wealth could surely attract anyone's mind. If he has developed an attachment for the kingdom, then I shall let him continue to rule as emperor." Hanuman left at once. He bounded swiftly through the forest lands and soon reached Guha's abode, telling him the happy news. The Nishada king was overjoyed, and he immediately set about preparing to leave for Ayodhya. Without delay, Hanuman continued on to Ayodhya, and he arrived early in the following morning. At a distance of 2 miles from the city, he found Bharat's dwelling. There he saw the prince, clad in black deer skins, emaciated from fasting and his hair matted. He sat by his wooden hut and shone with ascetic glory, and he was surrounded by his ministers and priests dressed in similar ascetic clothing. Hanuman reached Bharat and found him continuously repeating Ram's name. The monkey at once lay flat on the ground, offering his obeisance. Then, with folded palms, he stood before the prince and said, "Having completed his exile and slain Ravana, Ram will soon arrive, accompanied by Sita and Lakshmana. He has asked about after your welfare, and he longs to be reunited with you." Bharat was overwhelmed with joy and sank to the ground in a faint. After regaining consciousness, he stood up and embraced Hanuman. The king shed tears of happiness and he spoke in exuberance, "O monkey, I do not know if you are a god, a rishi, or what, but you have told me the most wonderful news. I shall give you 100,000 cows and many beautiful maidens adorned with gold and jewels." Bharat asked Hanuman to tell him in full what had happened to Ram since his departure, and the monkey recounted the tale. Bharat was delighted. He told Shatrughna, the other brother, to go to the city and spread the news of Ram's impending return. Bharat ordered the city to be fully decorated with pennants and garlands, and everyone should come out to greet Ram. Hanuman could easily understand Bharat's heart. Ram should have no doubt about his brother. His devotion for Ram was obviously no less than the devotion Hanuman himself felt. The monkey shed tears of joy as he witnessed Bharat's display of love for Ram. Shatrughna, along with Bharat's ministers, went to the city and began to prepare. They had Kushalya and Sumitra placed on palanquins and brought to Nandagram, where Bharat was living. Behind them came thousands of citizens, some walking, some on elephants or horseback, others on chariots. The blast of conches and roll of drums was tumultuous. A great roar came from the huge crowd, and it appeared as if the entire population of Ayodhya had come out of the city. The 14 years of Ram's exile had already ended, and all the citizens longed for his return. Many other monarchs were also present in Ayodhya, having been invited by Bharat to be present when Ram returned. By the end of the day, the whole region of Nandigram was completely crowded with people, all hoping for a glimpse of Ram. Bharat stood gazing to the south. He felt anxious. Had this monkey been telling the truth? Was Ram really about to return? When would he arrive? He questioned Hanuman again and again, and the monkey repeatedly assured him. Suddenly, Bharat saw in a distance the shining Pushpaka. Hanuman then shouted and pointed it out to Bharat. "Here comes the highly glorious Ram," he cried. The shout was echoed by the crowd of citizens, and a great clamor arose. They looked with amazement at the celestial vehicle carrying Ram and Sita, which appeared above the horizon like the sun and the moon joined together. Bharat fell to the ground like a rod, offering his prostrated obeisance with his arms outstretched toward the chariot. The Pushpaka descended to earth, and Ram dismounted along with Lakshman and Sita. Bharat ran over to them with Shatrughna, and the four brothers embraced each other for a long time. All the principal monkeys, headed by Sugriva, Angada, and Hanuman, assumed human forms and disembarked from the chariot. Along with Vibhishana, they were greeted warmly by Bharat, who embraced them all. Bharat said to Sugriva, "You are like a fifth brother to us all, O Monkey King." Ram saw Kushalya, his mother, nearby, and he broke free from the crowd of people who were pressing in around him. Quickly approaching his mother, he fell before her and clasped her feet. She was pale and emaciated through grief and separation from her son. Next to her was Sumitra, who appeared in similar condition. Ram also bowed before her and touched her feet with reverence. As they met Ram, the faces of both these ladies looked like celestial lotuses in full bloom. Ram greeted Kaikeyi, the mother who sent him away, and the other royal ladies who had come there. He offered his obeisance to Vasishta, that is their family guru, and Brahmins who uttered auspicious hymns from the Vedas. Ram then bowed at the feet of his father-in-law, Janaka, who shed tears of joy to see him return safe with Sita. As he stood up and looked around, Ram smiled at the citizens, bringing joy to their hearts. Bharat brought Ram's sandals, which he had kept upon Ayodhya's throne. He placed them before Ram and said, "Here is the entire kingdom held in trust by me on your behalf. Now I render it back to you, O Ram. My birth has borne fruit today, and my deepest desire is fulfilled, for I see you returned as king of Ayodhya." Bharat told Ram that everything in the kingdom, its exchequer, storehouses, army, and crops, had increased tenfold while he was gone. "All this is due to your influence alone, O Ram, for I ruled the kingdom thinking only of your example." Ram embraced Bharat again and again, and the two brothers shed tears of joy. Seeing the display of affection between them, the monkeys and Vibhishana wept. Ram then looked up at Pushpaka and said, "O Pushpaka, you may now return to your master, Kuvera. I thank you for your service." The heavenly chariot then rose to the sky and disappeared. When everyone was seated, Bharat addressed Ram, "Please assume the rulership of this world. Although I have officiated in your absence, I can no more rule in your presence than a candle can give light in the presence of the sun. Let the world see you shining with dazzling splendor after being consecrated upon the throne of Ayodhya." We all long only for this, O Raghava. Ram replied, Let it be so, and a great cheer went up from the assembly. Ram then had the royal barbers cut his hair, which was still a mass of matted locks. He took his bath and dressed in costly silks and brilliant gold ornaments. Many garlands of celestial flowers were hung about his neck, and he was daubed with sandal paste of various colors. Emperor Dasarath's widow dressed and decorated Sita. Her splendid beauty captivated the soul of whoever looked upon her. When Ram and his three brothers were all prepared, Bharat summoned Sumantra and the royal chariot. He personally took the reins, and Ram climbed aboard with Sita. As the chariot proceeded toward the city, Lakshman and Vibhishana fanned Ram on either side with white whisks, and Shatrughna held the royal parasol over his head. Hundreds of sages walked in front of the chariot, chanting mantras and hymns. Behind the chariot came Sugriva, still in human semblance, riding upon a great elephant, and followed by 9,000 other elephants bearing other monkeys. The procession moved in state through Ayodhya, accompanied by the blast of countless conches and roll of thousands of drums. There were followed by crowds of citizens, all anxious to see Ram's coronation. The city streets were beautifully decorated with flags and garlands. From the balconies of the mansions, women threw handfuls of flower petals and parched rice. Ram looked around at everyone and smiled, raising his hand in blessing. Ram entered into his father's palace and ordered Bharat to take Sugriva to his own palace. And then all the arrangements were made for his coronation. It's beautiful imagery to think in a human sense of this individual who had every right to be king, but was sent away for 14 years and lived like a hermit, visiting all the saints and sages, and then eventually having to rescue his wife by killing a demon. When we come into the kingdom of heaven, when we know our oneness with God, when soul, who is Sita in this case, and Christ consciousness, which is Ram, are united once again, then we feel this great joy, then there are tears of gratitude that flow down from our eyes. We feel complete, we feel whole. The light fills the city. Light fills our entire being. It is difficult to describe how pervasive the divine consciousness becomes within this physical body, within the astral body, within the causal body. Every cell of your being is purified and sanctified by the divine touch. Light pervades throughout your being. There are no darkened corners left anymore. There is complete and whole happiness by one and by all. And this is the culmination of great striving, of great overcoming, of all the things that Mother describes in the mystical crucifixion. It is described in the Bible as the reign of 1,000 years of peace. And this is a tremendous thing, a tremendous thing. It is rare on this earth for a soul to become completely emancipated. You can become a jiva mukta, a soul while freed, while living. Yeah, that is something that many individuals become when they are pure in heart and search for God with all of their mind, all of their strength, everything inside of them. But to completely eliminate all of your karma and to be completely freed, sahaja samadhi, is something that is really something to strive for. To go beyond the beyond, to become so immersed in God consciousness that there is nothing else left. There is only God. And if God chooses then to incarnate himself through you as a human being, then he may do so. Or he may withdraw himself into himself. And the form just simply falls inert, going back into the dust. From the dust it came, and to the dust it returns, as with all bodies. But here we have an example in the story of Ram of how this reuniting of soul and spirit, and then the entire city, because it is when the entire city within your own being, we have many cities, we have many countries, we have many levels of consciousness within us. Sometimes people have a particular experience and they're uplifted in God, and then they think that's the end of the story. They've had this tremendous experience, they now know the truth, but they have not gone through all the purification yet to become one whole, complete being in God. That is quite a thing to do. So in order to do that, we have to strive with everything that we have. And there are many ups and downs. There have been many ups and downs for me. There have been times when I have soared upon God's wings, and then other times when I've been taken down and taken into the wrong courses at times. But what happens when you are taken into the wrong way is that it doubles your determination. Once you recover into going all the way to God, that there is nothing else that you wish. There are times when the divine consciousness can come somewhat easily to us. We're in the flow of that, and there's a certain inertia that goes with that that just keeps on flowing, even if we do a few things that are off. But doing anything off eventually catches up with us, and then that division between ourselves and God gets brought down. And then we have to fight our way back again. And we realized how precious it is that we can't deviate even one thought from being in our oneness with God. That every single thought that we think has a creative power behind it. If all of your thoughts are of God, then that is what your creative power brings to you. But if your thoughts wander off in other directions, that is also brought to you. It has a consequence to it. But when you are lifted up into the final state of consciousness, in which you are now all of God's, and God's is all of yours, now there is no differentiation. You are the bubble that has burst its bounds, and you have immersed yourself into the sea. And then the sea can just as easily reform the bubble back so that the bubble of personality then comes back. But now it is imbued with the power and the spirit and the light of God. And there is nothing else but that. Can you not see what a glorious thing this is? This is the real meaning behind this celebration of Diwali. The lighting of the lamps, the lighting of the light within, both within the house and outside of the house, the decorations, the making the house new, everything is all an outward expression of what happens when you go within. And at the same time this year, because the Diwali is determined by the lunar year, it is the no moon, so to speak. It's when the moon has no light, and you're going to enter into the new light and come into the new year, so to speak. But we also have All Saints Day. Now, this has gotten turned into Halloween, and which originally meant Hallowed Eve. And it was in celebration of all the saints and all the souls for those who were of that tradition, who were in purgatory, and you could pray for all the souls who had died. That's why there are skeletons and that kind of thing that were used to represent these souls who had left the body, but were not yet in heaven, but were in this in-between state of purgatory. And so it's a day of celebrating the saints as well. They had started getting so many different saints that they couldn't have an individual day for all of them. So they put them all into one and said, let's celebrate for all the saints today, all those who have exemplified the teachings of the Christ. Let us have a day and honor all of those souls. So that's All Saints Day. So these have wonderful, wonderful origins, but like many of our holidays, they get reduced and they get put into just the outward form. And of course, it's very cute to see many of the children dressed up in these different costumes, and there's a wonderful aspect of that. But it would be very nice if we also recognize the original origins of this, and that on All Saints' Day, we pay special reverence to the saints of this world, both the known and the unknown. There are many saints who live not outwardly famous at all. They live quiet lives, but they have their impact, they have their influence. And so we honor all those that are known and unknown. We honor all those who have followed the Christ, followed Krishna, followed Buddha, followed whatever religion that they have been part of. They follow the teachings, because all the great religions, they all have the teachings embedded into them in order to ascend all the way into the kingdom of God. It's really wonderful when you think about it, that we do have different traditions, we do have different religions, we have different languages, we have different ethnicities, we have different cultures. And each one represents an aspect of God. And each one has its own journey back to God. And when we're not thinking about competing or who's right and who's wrong, definitely we can look and we can see when somebody is operating out of anger or greed, trying to build up their ego only. And these are not true religious leaders. These are charlatans. These are the hypocrites that Jesus pointed out. You'll notice that in the story of Jesus, so oftentimes, he will have great compassion for somebody who's caught doing a wrong, for the woman who is caught in an adulterous relationship, for other individuals who were lame or blind and had their karma that they were fulfilling, and he had great compassion upon them. But the ones he really turned his ire upon the most were those who were supposed to be representing the higher light, but they had not done this. They were full of ego. They were full of greed. They were full of anger and other kinds of things that were not representative of what they should have been. And Jesus would really go after these ones because they no longer were in ignorance themselves, but they were leading others into the ditch as well. And there is this takes a great karma with it then, because you have a double responsibility, or triple, or 10 times, or 1,000 times, the responsibility. When you set out to help others into the light, but you not only do not help them into the light, you stand as a shield against the light. This is a great crime against humanity. And it is something that has to be worked out by that individual soul, but not just the individual soul. But you have to help all of those that you guided and the generations that came afterwards who were damaged by that. So this is a tremendous responsibility when you take it on. And it's not something to be just taken lightly. It's not just a political position. It's not just something to exercise your power and control. If that's what it becomes, then you have betrayed your purpose. And I can tell you that there is a very great cost to this, a very great cost. One of the ways of thinking about karma that I think is very true, the kind of pain that you put out and create for other people and in their lives, you have to experience that pain. You can only imagine what a soul such as Hitler will have to go through. In order to redeem himself, he will have to face everything that he projected out from himself. And so he will have to encounter that pain. He will have to encounter that suffering. But it is through that pain and that suffering that his soul will be purified, and that one day he will stand in God consciousness, just as all souls and all creation will. We should not think that anybody is beyond the pale, that anybody cannot be saved, because all have come from God. Where else are they to return? but unto God, unto the purity of their origins. It is in truth what they truly are. When we see an individual and they are not acting properly, they have unlovely characteristics, they are committing a crime against themselves. Now, very definitely, they can harm other people. And this is something to have great compassion and where you can to stop the pain and the suffering. But to know as well that that individual will have to face everything that they've done, plus interest. So it's no small thing. And really, when you look at it properly, you can see every individual with compassion. You can see them with understanding. You can know, perhaps you haven't acted exactly like that before, but maybe there are qualities, maybe there are aspects of it that you have done in your own life. And as a result of that, have created suffering for others. So you can have compassion for another, but it doesn't excuse bad behavior, nor does it say that they'll just can get away with it. So these are things that we must understand, because there are great consequences to the things that we do, and we cannot hide them. We cannot put them away and act as if they never happened. There is God, who is the eternal witness within us. There is your own soul, and your own soul is truly the judge of you. When you rise up out of this body, you leave behind much of the limitations of body consciousness, and then you recognize what you have done or what you have not done. Now, it's not just the negatives, it's not just the bad, it's the good as well. If you have fulfilled your life's purpose, what your soul came to do, then you will rejoice. Then you will feel good and have justifiable pride in what you have done. But if you have failed at what you came to do, then you will have great grief in that moment. And it's not something that you can just sweep underneath the rug and pretend like it never happened. It's all out there in front of you. And that judge inside of you, that purity of the divine, will feel the pain of what you have done. So let us determine today, even like Ram, to do what is right. He was determined in every circumstance to do what fulfilled the highest light. And that was why he is an incarnation of Dharma, because he did that. And at a great cost to himself and a great cost to those that he loved around him. And yet, it was very clear to him what he must do. What he must do. So when we are encountering a temptation, perhaps a little temptation to lie, not tell the truth, to get around something, let us consider that very carefully, because that too has consequences. And this is the thing that we learn as we travel up the ladder of realization, that everything has consequences. And we may choose to do that, but we should not complain too loudly later on when it all comes back to us and we have to pay the price for that. One of the great things that we can do in this life is to help others carry their burden. And when we see somebody else who is suffering, if we see somebody else who is having a difficulty, to do what we can. It may be a smile. Master used to say, be a smile millionaire. Be a smile millionaire. Give them a smile. Give them some encouragement. Give them a helping hand. Whatever it is that God inside of you prompts you to do. Let your love become visible through the actions that you do. Don't let it always be invisible, but let it be visible through the actions that you do. And where you can see to be of help, then be of help. This is a tremendous opportunity that we have in this life. And really, you know, the state of the world can get us down sometimes because we see all the cruelty, we see all the ignorance, we see all the things that happen in this world. But one thing is for sure. If you are intent on doing good in this world, of helping this world, there's plenty of opportunities. There's plenty of times when you can let that light shine through you and you can make a difference. And you may say, along with the little squirrel, you know, well, what difference does that do? If I just take a little sand in my tail and shake it out, it's not really building this bridge. But you do what you can, and God will shine through you. And God will magnify whatever it is that you do. He will add to it. And so when you smile and you do it with the thought of God, God smiles through you. When you look out through these eyes and you see this world with compassion and understanding and love, God is looking out through your eyes and seeing it with love, compassion, and understanding. So do not ever think or discount what you do in this world. You may think somebody may be bedridden, but they can still pray for this world. They can still think of those who need their help and send out through thought power into prayer power. And prayer power is when God imbues your thoughts with His power and His light and His love. Isn't that a wonderful thing to do? And so there is no one in this world at any stage of infirmity or anything else that cannot be a blessing to this world, that cannot help this world to lift itself up. And you can be an example of that. You can be Ram incarnate, Dharma, doing the right thing for the right purpose, for the right reason. You don't need to be a billionaire. You don't need to be physically all of that fit to carry somebody else's load. There's many ways to help another individual carry their load. And one of them can just be giving words of encouragement and love. If you look for those opportunities, they're all around you. They really are. When you live a life of service, you feel God flowing through you. You feel inspired. You feel uplifted. You feel His power. You feel His intelligence. He teaches you so many things when you feel His thoughts flowing through your mind. It's a tremendous life. It really is. And so we light the lights. We light the lights within. We light the lights outside. We don new clothes. That is, we put on new thoughts, new intentions, new energy for carrying into this world. And we start a new year, and we can start that right today, right this very moment, and carry it on with throughout our lives. And you will never be bored, I can guarantee you that. I don't even remember what boredom is. I really don't. I remember when I was in second grade and I broke my arm. It was summertime, and I had a huge cast from my shoulder all the way down to my fingers because it's a bad break. And it was a miserable time. I would tell my mother that I was bored. And I was then. But I tell you, I cannot remember a time when I have been bored. Because God infuses everything with His life and His intelligence and His love. And there is nothing boring about that at all. Even if you're sitting in your chair and you are wrapped in His presence and you feel Him penetrating through every cell of your being, how can you be bored? You are filled up. And He is so powerful and is so dynamic in His expression. And your body may not be doing a thing, but He's pouring Himself through you. And I can tell you, it goes out into this world and it makes its effect known. So let us celebrate Diwali. Let us celebrate All Saints' Day. Let us bring to remembrance the inner meaning and the real reason. We both honor the outward saints, but we also honor that divine sense of our own selves. And we bow down and we pray to it. Lord, You guide my life. You propel me into the light. You make me a servant so that everything that I do, everything that I think, everything that I say is infused with Your words, Your thoughts, your power, so that you may fulfill your will in this world. It really is the most wonderful, the most beautiful thing. I have an announcement to make this morning that started with the story of Papa when he was, that Mother told of when he was going to walk across the field, and the minister, Methodist minister, had wanted to go with Papa, and so the Methodist minister was thinking of all the adventures and things that were going to happen, and got halfway across the field, and they stopped, and they came back, and confused the minister. Wow, I thought we were supposed to go across the field. Well, we were, but we got halfway across, and we stopped, and Ram said to come back. So Ram Dass is his servant, his slave. He turned around and came back. So some while ago, Carla had said that she'd like to travel south and spend some time in the desert, and I'm certainly keen to spend some time in the desert. There's something that calls to me about the desert that I love being out in. Sometimes we might think of the desert as being dirty. To me, it feels very clean, has a very clean vibration to it. So we had planned on leaving, but this morning she woke up and realized this was not the right time to come. So she came in and she said, I think that it's not the right time to go. And I said, well, whatever you like, I'm fine with that either way. But that throws her off her game, because she comes in lined up with all these reasons to support why she's saying what she's saying. And so she's never satisfied just to get an agreement right away. That's no fun. So she has to continue on with all of the arguments of why it's a good idea. So we're not going to go south, and we're going to be staying up here and at least through the first of the year. And then perhaps we'll be headed south then. So that's the announcement. So I'm pleased either way, you know. It's an interesting thing. Swamiji once said to me, when you think of the ashram, you are here. So this is the time when I was going. And I didn't fully understand what he said at the time. I had a sense of what he was saying, of course. But it's grown in me with time. And thought and, how do you say it? Thinking something, when you're in that divine consciousness, it makes it so. You don't just necessarily think of a castle, and the castle is there. Babaji might do that, but when you think of somebody, when you think of a situation or a place, and feel yourself there through God consciousness, because God is everywhere, huh? He's omniscient. And so, near or far, you know, I think of anyone, and I just feel that close, close connection right there. And it's a wonderful thing to be able to do. You don't really have to get in the car and go someplace. There's still practical things that you have to do, of course. Have to get in a car and come here to be here. But just thinking of being with you, and it is so. It is so. And there's a tremendous feeling of God that's in it. So it reduces this kind of need to go here and there and to be with this person and that person. I always enjoy it. I always enjoy it. But there's not that need that's there. I feel completely full and content wherever I am. So it's a wonderful state of consciousness that God has me in. And sometimes he doesn't do that much in this form. You know, I think, well, God, what do you have me here for? He just keeps me seated in meditation and just wrapped in his presence and his consciousness. And that's it. That can be my day. But he has his purpose in doing it. Other times he has me active and doing things. So when he has me in his presence and you come to mind. I think of you, and immediately there's a connection. It's like bringing two wires together that have electricity in them, and suddenly there's a connection, and there's a passing through of that life energy and that God energy. So, for whatever reason his purpose is, he has us staying, and then perhaps another time going and returning and so on. So, but I'm very happy to be here this morning. I feel such great love and such great bliss. And it's for you, God, and your forms. There's no place I would rather be than right here in this moment. So in that spirit, pranams, I bow to the light within you. And I pray God's greatest blessings, that you are lifted up into his presence, that you know him always, not just a little experience here and there, but that you are profoundly changed down to the cellular level, and that you would know his presence in every part of your being, that this returning of Ram and Sita to Ayodhya and the lights being lit and the great celebration should be the celebration of your soul uniting with God. Now if we'll pray. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for thee. I kneel in adoration at thy feet and surrender myself to thee. I feel the power of thy perfection surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence are radiant with thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy of thy bliss. In every cell of my being. In every part of this world. Throughout this universe. And all creation. Forever and forever. Peace, bliss, Amen.